KBOO that I listen to every day. I'm a supporter here. And I said, Lisa, here's KBOO's number. Let's do it. And she's been here since about, before 11 this morning. I've been sweeping here, and just everyone is thrilled to be here.
And has Lisa been part of the effort of hair salons here in Portland to give hair to the Gulf prior to today?
She did not know about it until today, or until this announcement for today, no.
And I suppose she probably will be after this.
Well, she is does more private cutting hair, and she's been saving it for the last week since she heard it. And in fact, I have been saving my own hair from my hairbrushes for the last 2.5 years and brought a pretty good-sized bag down here myself, as well as some other people have brought hair that they've been saving.
Wow. And, of course, the hair, if you do come by, you should wash your hair beforehand, make sure there's no hair products in your hair. And Rupert Popkin, also with us, what do you think about this whole effort today? You've been letting people in the front door.
I think it's sensational. I've been amazed at the public response to this problem. And, we've had a nonstop people coming into the front of the building, and I've been sending them all the way to the back, and people have been getting their haircuts, and it's been a great response.
And about the oil spill itself, I mean, we have heard from the Coast Guard, and we're going to talk to Malik Rahim about this, that that we shouldn't be sending hair booms, we shouldn't be helping out. And I wanted to ask both of you what you think about that. Should we follow the government's order on this?
Well, as far as following government order, I think we try to do that in our life, I guess. But in this case, I say no. I mean, I was told to stay away from Oaxaca, Mexico by the government, and I was needed there.
I'm just amazed. I would like to know what the Coast Guard is doing. Their motto is Semper Paratus, which means always prepared, always ready. And what are they prepared for? They don't seem to have reacted very well to this problem.
And I know having been in New Orleans after Katrina, when the government was actually saying the same thing, don't come down here, we're doing fine, but yet at the same time seeing people with their help signs on the news, I knew that the government didn't have everything under control. And I think it's pretty clear right now that the government doesn't have everything under control.
Well, we say, you know, grassroots are the way to do things. I think hair roots are one way too.
That's very clever. I agree. I just think any kind of effort is better than no effort at all. I mean, if the government isn't going to do something, then weird people have to.
And in New Orleans, WWL Radio has been broadcasting during the day. People have been calling in. And one New Orleans resident says during those call-ins, political illusions are crumbling, anger is mounting to a boiling point, and radio talk show hosts are calling out both political parties for siding with the corporations against the people. And I do want to bring in Malik Rahim from New Orleans, and I want to play before that just a clip from WWL Radio in New Orleans, in which Plaquemines Parish President Billy Nungesser, and if you aren't familiar with the southern Louisiana coast, Plaquemines Parish is actually south of New Orleans and is the coastal region there. So Parish President Billy Nungesser says that Coast Guard Commandant Thad Allen has not been responsive to the people's needs. And, well, we'll hear what he has to say.
When did you get the word about your project?
Last night I got a conference call with Mary Lynn, the commander, and Admiral Allen's assistant. And about halfway through the call, I said, you know what, you're giving me excuses, not reasons why. You know, we only got so much money in the fund and this and that. And I said, well, approve part of the plan. Take the best parts of the plan and approve it. Do something. So you're going to reject the whole thing and keep deploying the same boom that keeps getting washed up. That's a plan.
Who's making the decision, the Army Corps or BP?
I think it's a joint effort. To be honest with you, I think there's something bigger. There's something doesn't make sense. In those, look, Colonel Lee canceled his meetings in Baton Rouge and drove to New Orleans to help us put this together. In the conference call, not one agency, they all had concerns, but not one of them said don't do it, because they all knew the alternative. They all knew if we didn't do something massive, we were going to have devastation in the marsh. Yet they reject the plan. What do? They say it's going to be days, not weeks. Well, what do you have to do? Well, we got a lot to do. Well, what's a lot? Well, a lot of things. We got to review everything. Well, that's what we did in the conference call. And then all of a sudden, bam, they come out. What they did is they should have said it's going to take us 5 days to come up with enough reasons to convince y'all that we shouldn't do it. And they BS reasons, and they ought to all lose their job,
you know,
all the way up to the top.
I get the
There's none of them gives a rat's ass about this marsh.
See, I get the feeling that we're like some of these big fish in the Gulf. BP put this nice hunk of bait out for us, because I remember talking to you when this first began. Boy, you were so positive. You were so pumped up. We were all so convinced that BP is the good guy here. They're going to help us out. And we grabbed that piece of bait, and they hooked us.
And you know what? Maybe BP sat in the room with the Corps and the Coast Guard and convinced each other they don't want to spend the money. Something stinks here. It was too good of a plan. Everybody was on board, and all they did was take 4 or 5 days to rip it apart. And nothing in that conference call last night. Nothing. And I'm sorry, Coast Guard. You got BS excuses. There was nothing you told me. There's a reason we don't have dredges out there pumping today. They were excuses. They were not reasons. They were excuses. And that's what they took 5 days to do. Currently, I saw a different person last Monday. He was probably told, you find a reason not to do this plan. He was too pumped up about it before last Monday. For 5 days, what they did was went to work to find a reason why not to save coastal Louisiana. So now, I believe my boy, Capstan, we got God and prayer and a hope, and we better hang on to that, because we don't have any help other than that, because the boom's not working. It's not going to work, and he's right. It's not devastated the coast yet, but I'm going out there this morning to go look at the areas that have been impacted and cleaned up the best they could. And we'll just wait for the next front to come through and destroy another section of marsh.
We are listening to a segment from WWL Radio in New Orleans. That was Plaquemines Parish President Billy Nungesser. So we are also joined by Malik Rahim on the line from New Orleans. What do you think, Malik? Is it true what Billy Nungesser is saying, that it's been nothing but excuses from BP and the Coast Guard?
Well, I hate to say it, but that seemed to be our government pattern. That's the same thing that happened in the aftermath of Katrina. And we haven't learned anything yet. You know, it was volunteers. It was those who cared. It was letting the community take in charge. Those who lived there that made a difference and an impact in the aftermath of Katrina. You can't go out there with people that have no kinship with the land, that is only motivated by a salary, and expect them to do the work that is needed to be done. You got to have people out there that care, that their interest is in saving this environment. Because as I said last week when I was on your show, so goes the Gulf Coast, so goes America. And so goes America, so goes life as we know it. We need to be doing everything. And it saddened me that there's not a national outcry, you know, for what's going on there. Everybody should be up on their senators and congresspersons and demanding that they do something to kick both BP and our government in the behind, to get them off of this procrastination and so we can do something to really save this land. Because it just shouldn't have happened, even with the oil spill. It shouldn't have got this bad.
Of course, President Obama is saying he's mobilized the largest emergency mobilization in history, but still hasn't found fit to declare a national emergency. What do you make of that?
I don't know what it takes. If this is not a national emergency, then I don't know what is, you know. And it's sad that we are, you know, that we are allowing any company or any industry, because it's not just BP. Yeah, it may be BP in, here in the Gulf Coast, but it's Chevron in the Amazon, and it's Shell in Nigeria. So it's the entire industry, you know, that is doing these things. Then, you know, it's just that now the chickens have come home to roost. You know, it's happening to us. And we are seeing that these guys, regardless of how many jobs they create, you know, it's not enough safeguards to assure that a disaster like the one we are witnessing now should never have to happen.
We also have Rupert Popkin in the studio. Do you have a comment or question?
Well, I was only going to ask, do you feel that the Gulf Coast had even recovered from Katrina before this had happened, Mr. Rahim?
Excuse me, I couldn't hear you.
I'm sorry, sir. Do you feel that the Gulf Coast had even recovered from Hurricane Katrina before this disaster has visited the area?
Well, it's not the idea of Katrina. You got to remember, like the fishermen's up in Cocotree and in Punishee, out in Grand Isle, they have been hit by 4 hurricanes. They was hit by Katrina and then Rita, then Gustav and Ike, and now this. So it's not the idea of recovering from one. It's been a multitude of disasters.
It sounds like it's absolutely amazing that you can even survive down there.
Listen, nature have the ability to replenish itself. We are a part of nature, so we can replenish too. But this is a way of life. This is a way of life that is unique to America. And then just off of the need. You know, I mean, all those, I would say maybe 20 to 30% of the most toxic chemical factories in the country is here. You know, we are full of refineries. You know, I mean, the things that, we didn't learn nothing from Gulf Earl and what happened there, you know, in the aftermath of Katrina. So, I mean, you know, we are caught up into this, but it is survivable.
You believe it is survivable, sir?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I know it is.
I'm glad to hear you're optimistic.
I wouldn't be here.
That's good to hear. It's good to hear you're optimistic in the face of such a huge disaster.
Oh, yes.
Well, that's great.
Because I'm going to tell you something. I've seen the impossible be made possible.
Well, that's very good to hear.
I witnessed that in the aftermath of Katrina. So I know it can happen. You dig? And I'm a very spiritual person. I'm not a religious person, but I'm very spiritual. And I truly believe that the key to success is faith in the Most High, confidence in yourself, and be willing to make a sacrifice. And I believe as long as we keep out of that three at heart, that we'll be successful and we can overcome this. But I don't want to see us overcoming it without learning from it.
Those are very wise words, yes. We have to learn from this. We can't keep making the same mistake again, that's for sure.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Just because we have found the key to the door, that don't mean we should let the door be open or closed, for any apparent reason. We have to make sure that we learn how can we cooperate with nature. You know, how can we make sure that these safeguards? I mean, right now, we are talking about the damage that is done by this oil spill. But over the last 30 years, look at the damage the petroleum industry have done to our wetlands and barrier islands. Look what we have lost. You know, look what we did when we allowed the petroleum industry to tell us to build this canal to prosperity that could wind up being a highway of debt. And I'm talking about the Mississippi Gulf outlet. So, again, we have to start learning from these disasters. And everything that needs to be learned, it isn't in the court. It isn't in no classroom, you know.
Yeah.
And it's sad that during this time, we are not taking the advice of people who have been living in these areas for well over 200 and 300 years.
Yeah, well, the people responsible for this pollution don't live in the area and aren't going to suffer from the consequences of what's happened. So it's up to you and the people around you to really recover from this.
Oh, no.
Well, it's up to all of us. And I think that's one of the things that Malik, if you want to just touch on, after Katrina, you put a call out for activists around the country to come down and mobilize to help with the relief effort. Do you have a similar call going on right now?
I'm having a similar call out right now for people to come down. To come down here and listen, let's force the government to do what they're supposed to do. Listen, just think if right now, just 1 million people in America would just take up on the pledge that I will plant at least 50 of these indigenous plants for these wetlands that we're going to lose. You know, that we gonna just think what could be restored. Just think what we can do.
It's true. You know, it's what we can do.
And this is, you know, I mean, listen, we have to come forward. Listen, government don't have a conscience. Business don't have a conscience. But we are people. We have a conscience. And those who stand for environmental peace and justice got to stand up. We got to make our voices heard because we are too critical of a time. You know, no, this cleanup can't be left upon just capital.
Yes.
So we have to do it.
Yes, it's up to us. And we're here in the KBOO studios right now. I'm looking at through the window at four people cutting hair, and we're collecting hair to send down to the Gulf. I want to let listeners know that you can call in if you have a question or comment on this effort. The number to call is 503-231-8187. We welcome your phone calls at this time. In the studio with us is Sue Castor, who's been helping out with the hair cutting this morning, and I wanted to know what you thought about this mobilization.
I think hearing Malik this morning, you are a holy and eloquent speaker, Malik. I wish I could blink my eyes and be right there and with some of this hair and stuff it in a stocking and just get some of that oil on my hands and think of maybe saving one bird, one plant.
Oh, yes. And that's all it takes.
Just that's one at a time.
Takes. That's right.
So you're asking for people to come down and volunteer as well?
Oh, yes. Yes, Janka. That's my greatest cry, you know, for people to come down and get involved. Listen, we have a center. We can probably accommodate 100 people, you know. But you know how we did it after Katrina, you know. So we know how to make space, how to make perfect uses of space. And I know this, that if we had 100 people, you know, down here right now in any of these areas, just training them on how to do the cleanup and how to do it correctly and how to do it in a way that is environmentally sustainable. If we could just start training them so that when they could start training others, and then when it's time for the replanting, because we have to concede that some of our wetlands we're going to lose to this earth still. But we can say that here's the line. We draw the line right here. And not that we're going to just be satisfied with stopping it, but then our effort is how can we restore what we have lost? You know, how can we restore it? How can we develop the mechanism that we can work with nature on helping it to restore? You know, how can we make sure that those wetlands is restored in a way for all the God's creatures that live in this area? Not just the ones we consume, but for everything. How can we restore this area? Because I'm going to tell you, Janka, and I can't say it enough. You know, right now we are living in two critical times in human history, you know, because this is the first time that I have ever read of where man has the ability to literally destroy life as we know it, you know. And I'm seeing it happen in ways that is worse than war.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's an ecosystem. We live in an ecosystem. We can't deny that we're a part of something larger than just a commercial enterprise.
That's right.
We need the Gulf to survive. If it dies, who knows what could happen, what impact that could have on the ecosystem as a whole.
The United States, as you said, Mr. Rahim.
I truly believe that if we lose the Gulf Coast, we are just about to say we are lost life as we know it.
And just to get back to the effort that we're helping raise hair today, if you want to come down and be part of this hair-raising experience, come and get your hair cut. Please wash your hair before you come. We don't want any hair care products in it. And then we will be sending it down to Malik Rahim's group. And I understand that the group is the Meg Perry Center for Environmental Peace and Justice, which is a spinoff from Common Ground Relief, not actually Common Ground Relief itself.
It's a spinoff. It's a spinoff from Common Ground Relief and Common Ground Collective and Common Ground Health Clinic. And the reason why I named the three is because Meg was a member of all three. You know, Meg, she came down and joined the collective, but she also worked for the founding of Common Ground Relief and Common Ground Health Clinic. So, yes, we have opened up a center in her honor because, as you know, when Meg was killed, the local media only portrayed her death as a death of a drifter.
Hmm. You know, Meg Perry was an activist from Maine who helped with Common Ground Collective and with the Common Ground Health Clinic in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina in 2005 and was killed in a bus accident in New Orleans. And the center is named after her because of her efforts to really jumpstart bioremediation in the region.
That's right. That's right. Because as you remember, when she died, she was leaving a rally for international human rights. And she was on her way to the wetlands up in Houma, in the area that is now being impacted by this oil spill. That's where she was on her way when she was killed, you know, to help start the wetland restoration program that Polly and Sunseer was doing in the Houma region.
And how's the Houma region been impacted by this oil spill? Has there been oil washing up on the native reservation there, the Houma reservation?
If not, it will be.
And have you yourself been down to the wetlands south of New Orleans,
you know,
and seen any
you know
of this?
What? In certain areas, BP will only allow you to go so far. And that's sad to say. And I thought they was denying me interest because I was a old gray-headed black militant. But then they denied Madea Benjamin access back there also. So, you know, they are really picking and choosing who really see what. You know, now you have these open beaches, but you can't really see where the damage is. The damage is in those wetlands. And if you cannot get out there in those wetlands, then you can't really have a real understanding of it. But we are relying on the people who live there to tell us, you know, what is going on and what can we do. You know, one of the things that I'm moving on, I'm going to try to start a bike ride from out in Houma to New Orleans. you know, in order to bring more attention to what's going on. You know, and then hopefully we'll do the same thing by going from New Orleans to D.C. to bring awareness, because we have to make people aware of how critical a moment we are in human history and what we have to do to assure that that serious toxic America don't become a reality.
Mm. And we are hearing some signs of resistance in Jefferson Parish. Emergency personnel commandeered BP boats that were sitting idle as oil was washing into the Barataria wetlands during a high tide just last week. Have you heard of other acts like that where local communities have taken action where BP would not?
No, but I'm going to tell you. That frustration is steady growing. I believe you're going to start seeing more and more of it.
And what about your volunteer effort? It will be based in New Orleans. People can come down there and begin volunteering with the cleanup. Do you need any special skills to come down and volunteer?
We would love any environmental scientist, any person who have any type of expertise and working these areas, like anybody who has been in San Francisco with the cleanup. So we're just looking for people, just genuine people who is willing to learn and is willing to come together, as willing to put all our little differences aside and come together in an effort to make sure that we can restore our wetlands. And I want you to mind what I'm saying. I'm not saying clean up an oil spill. I say restore our wetlands. I believe that we need to come back down here, and we need to make our presence known that we are here and we're going to be here to restore this wetlands, because this isn't going to be no fly-by-night operation. Even if they do, and there's no 100% guarantee that they will in August to be able to totally shut off that oil spill. So even if they do, this is something that we're going to be living with and facing for the next 10 to 15 years. You can still go to Alaska and find oil in those rocks and up behind that Valdez oil spill. And how many years ago that's been?
21 years, and as we heard this morning,
again,
only
know,
8 of
so
22 species have been restored. Yeah, I mean, the Alaska Native elders that were on this morning talking about the species that were so impacted by that oil spill 21 years ago, and only 8 out of the 22 species are now in the recovered list. So 21 years, and they're still suffering. And that oil spill is small in comparison with what the Gulf is facing right now. 3 to 5 days, every 3 to 5 days, the gusher is pumping out the amount of oil that spilled during the Exxon Valdez oil spill. And it's been going for over 40 days.
That's right. That's right. And we have at least maybe 40 or more at a minimum.
Wow. Again, we're speaking with Malik Rahim in New Orleans with the Meg Perry Center for Environmental Peace and Justice. We'll be sending hair down there. And what will be done with the hair, Malik?
Well, we're going to, once we get the nylons and get the ability, after we start showing people what can be done, and start, we're going to give workshops where we can show people how this can effectively clean up the oil spill. We are inviting those who have used it in San Francisco to come down and do a demonstration for us. And then the next thing we would like to do is present it to first our city representatives, to our mayor, to our city council, to our state representatives, and to our state senators, and then to our federal ones, you know, and get them involved. And if they see that these ways, because I'm going to tell you, Jacob, right now we are like a house that's on fire. And a house that's on fire, no one will turn down some real rational assistance. You know, if your house was on fire, any rational person could come and help you put it out. You won't be concerned about their race, their sexuality, or their nationality, or their class. You want your house to be saved. And that's what kind of position we are in now. And we have to understand that the only way we can do this, because I don't care who it is, I don't have all the answers, and no one else have all the answers. But together we may come up with it, you know. And you can't say that just because I'm a big I and you a little T, that you know, that I'm it. You know, no, it don't happen like this. We have to look at this and deal with it in a rational manner, sitting down with and respecting everyone, point of view as it relates to how can we address this tragic situation. Because as we sit and we are waiting, it's just like during Katrina, and we turn a disaster into a tragedy. And and that's what we are doing now. We have turned an environmental disaster into the first environmental tragedy that this nation has faced.
And Malik, you know, the analogy that you used about the house on fire, it's a strange irony considering that the government is allowing basically the party that started the fire to put it out.
Oh, yes.
It's like telling an arsonist, okay, you started this fire, so go ahead.
So you put it out.
And I mean, they should be responsible, but it seems like they don't have a whole lot of ideas. Here's a funny thing. I emailed British Petroleum for an interview, and they emailed me back their automated response telling me who to talk to. And then on the automated response, it said, if you have ideas on how to stop this oil spill, contact so-and-so. They don't have a lot of ideas. I mean, what they're stuck with is throwing trash down at it, cutting with saws, then trying to cap it, although it doesn't seem to be very effective. And it seems like what we need right now is some imagination.
Jacob, the problems exist when, yes, BP should be responsible of stopping that oil spill. But our government, our state, our federal, and our local government responsibility is to save the wetlands. BP, their obligation is to stop that, just to stop it. If their concentration was on that, then we could concentrate on what it takes to clean this up. They shouldn't have to be taking upon the responsibility of this cleanup in the manner that they are doing. Listen, how wasteful it is when you see a person standing up there wiping off leaves that they know gonna die, and knowing that more as fast as they wipe it up, here's some more oil coming there to inundate it again.
And Malik,
we need to be talking about how can we set up barriers, you know, to protect our wetland. How can we make sure our marshes and those barrier islands will be able to survive? You know, we need to be talking about any individual, any university or any environmental scientist throughout this world to come in and really work with us, not in a BP way, but just in a human global way. Because now it's too late for any more talking about civic responsibility. We have to talk about global responsibility. We have to uplift it to the next level. Because right now, it's all about how can we save life as we know it. And we cannot save it in a drunken state of prosperity that we are in right now.
Well, and you heard Plaquemines Parish President Billy Nungesser, if you were listening earlier, and his frustration in dealing with the Coast Guard and with BP, actually there are ideas, but they're not interested in actually trying to implement them at this point, and instead allowing the oil to just keep on flowing. We do have a caller who has a question. Vernon, you're on the air.
Hello, Malik. This is Vernon from Bike for Peace. I'd like you to share with... How are you?
All right.
I'd like you to share with the listeners some of your vision of a world without oil and how we can change our lifestyles to make a better world.
Well, I'm going to tell you, Vernon, and I've asked you to please bear with me on this, because we know that nothing will happen overnight. So it's how can we live with it until we can find other ways, because there are other ways that exist. But until then, how can we live with this? How can we use it in the most effective way with the least impact upon our environment? That's the thing that we have to do until that day comes. Because I'm like you, I pray for the day that, because right now, if we had enough solar panels out in those barrier islands and in our wetlands, if we would have some solar panels up there to absorb some of this heat, because I'm going to tell you right now, it's probably with the heat index probably got it here in New Orleans at about 100, you know. So we have the alternatives that we can use. You know, for many years we've been telling them about methane, you know. We have wave technology. We have wind technology. We have other means, and those are just the meager ones that I know of. You know, so yeah, we can move to water, but in the interim, how can we live? How can we live now? How can we put safeguards on it? How can we make sure that the petroleum industry don't put pressure on the president and make him lift that moratorium? You know, how can we keep going for a clean air, a real clean air act? You know, how can we look at what we are doing and how can we help others? You know, because we got to remember, you know, nobody cared about what happened in the Amazon. Look how Chevron left the Amazon.
Yeah, and that battle is still going on.
There's no outcry about that. So again, how can we help others? How can we all come together? How can we sit at the table and learn from the Eskimos and the others that up in Alaska? How can we learn from the people up in Africa who have went through the same tragedy that we're about to experience? How can we learn from the Indians up in the Amazon region? How can we learn from them to make sure, you know, that globally that we can push for a global act? Because right now, we're talking about life as we know it. And I'm not just talking about it in America, but on this planet. And we should not just take it for granted and leave it up to no companies to do what is right. Because, again, I never met a business with a conscience.
It's always about the bottom line when you're in the business world. We have another caller on the line. Ty, you're on the air.
Thank you. How are you guys today? Other than depressed and distressed like myself.
Well, I'm trying to keep a level head and actually do something about it.
Yep, just trying to be optimistic.
Well, I guess, you know, he made so many good points, and I think it points to the overall bigger picture that you got to at the end. You know, I see everything from, you know, chemtrails to still in the Nigerian Peninsula. We're 50 years in to continuate the oil spills. And there's no media, there's no discussion, there's no actual, you know, addressing it in the first place. And I find it to be almost sad that, you know, there aren't any real answers, but there are a whole bunch of people that claim to be taking responsibility. And so, you know, if I were a rational person thinking critically about this situation, I would agree with you that BP should be absolutely 100% responsible for capping this and stopping it and not necessarily cleaning it up. I do, however, believe
that as the company that created this problem that, as we're seeing, shouldn't be going on, Barack Obama shouldn't be continuing to allow us to be pumping and drilling anywhere. I mean, we can see the catastrophe as it happens now. So, I mean, the accountability isn't really there. The perception of accountability is what they want. The perception is what people are accepting. And the reality is what the people are dealing with down there. And I have family down in New Orleans that dealt with it in Katrina. And one of them specifically, lucky enough to live on the sliver in the river, if anybody understands what that is. And this house was barely spared by feet. He had so much flooding going on that, you know, it did a lot of damage. But the reality is his home was spared, and he is one of the so few lucky. And he tells the stories about the Blackwater coming in and taking guns and blocking bridges. No media talks about that. The accountability isn't really there, and it's sad that people don't ask the questions, that media doesn't cover the reality of what's happening, and it's all about the perception. And while everybody is wondering what's going on, BP is still continuing to ship to their distributors. BP is continuing to continue the bottom line, and that is we're going to look like we're doing something and act as though our money is bottom line, and it is. Their shareholders count first, the environment is last, and anybody caught in the wake, we don't really care. And that is the reality of the action. And I hope people stop believing what they want them to perceive of this.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I think that that we have to start looking at this, and we have to take, because see, in the aftermath of Katrina, as you were saying about those atrocities that have happened, I've seen with volunteers who came down in spite of the government efforts to prevent them. I've seen what they came down here and do. You know, as an African American, I witnessed when I was quarantined to Algiers and couldn't leave. You know, and I've seen with volunteers who took advantage of their privilege of being white to make sure that we had food and water here and shamed our government into opening up to everyone. I've seen individuals who have stood up and said that, yes, there was vigilantes in Algiers, which it took 4.5 years, but now indictments might be finally presented to some of them. I've seen them when they talked about the police and how brutal and how racist they were. And right now we have had 4 to plead guilty for that Danziger Bridge incident. So again, we are moving forward. Now it's 5, you know. So again, we are moving forward. But it takes people to come down and get involved. You know, I mean, listen, we are not in some form of living under some form of dictatorship where we cannot come down. We have that ability. You need to come down. And if you come down, then you can go back and tell those that you know what you have experienced, what you have witnessed, not what the media is saying. Because the media had once said that everybody that was left in New Orleans was just looters.
Well, that's interesting,
so again,
Malik.
It takes you to come down. If you want to make sure that the government do what they're supposed to do, then you have to do what you're supposed to do. If you want to make sure the government makes sure that business do what they're supposed to do, then you have to do what you're supposed to do. And we all cannot just sit idly by and leave it up to others. It is too critical of a time that we are living in. We have been blessed that we are living in the most richest and the most powerful nation on this planet. We have opportunities that others can't even conceive.
That's very true, Malik.
We need to involve. We need to get and use them.
Malik, I was wondering, have you seen any BP private security going around down there?
Well, you can't go too far without running into some form of security.
And that's private security and not Coast Guard security?
Well, you know, I mean, it's all interrelated.
Yeah.
Because all this is coming under Homeland Security.
But But it appears that there's private security working in reference to Homeland Security, which I find very disturbing.
Well, it's going to always be, because everybody looking at this as a business and a business opportunity.
Well, and the thing that a lot of people have to realize is that Halliburton is very much involved as well in this BP, what we call the BP oil spill. It's not just BP. Halliburton, another company with a pretty horrific record, if you look at it, was also a part of the rig that failed.
Well, you got to remember Kellogg Brown and Root is a subsidiary of Halliburton. And Kellogg Brown and Root have been in this area doing pipeline construction work for at least 50 to maybe 100 years, you know.
Well, I know they were involved in some atrocities in Iraq as well, and the port of New Orleans contract was handed over to Kellogg Brown and Root for recovery after Katrina. Without too much bidding on that contract. In fact, I don't think there was any.
Now, I was just wondering, Kellogg Brown and Root's a subsidiary of Halliburton, right? Who was formerly in charge of Halliburton? Wasn't it a guy called Dick Cheney?
Well, I couldn't tell you.
I think it was. I think Dick Cheney.
You know, the irony around Dick Cheney and his involvement in KBR, he's also been involved in the Mineral Management Service and BP. And in 2003, gave BP permission not to put in a safety valve on this rig, which is required in virtually every other country in which offshore drilling happens. But the United States, with a special exemption from Dick Cheney himself, allowed BP to go ahead with offshore drilling without the automated shutoff valve.
We're all left speechless. We really are. I mean, it's almost unbelievable. It's just so tragic.
It's chilling.
Yeah. Our hearts go out to you, and our hair.
So yeah, we're collecting bags of hair. I'm looking back in the back studio here. We've got hairdressers cutting hair, and that hair then we're putting into bags and boxes and sending it down to the Gulf, where it will be turned into hair mats in order to help mop up some of this oil. The hair mats are a pretty interesting concept in that they're part of a bioremediation process. The hair mats can be put down, and actually a type of mushroom can grow on top of that and help digest the oil into a more usable form for the ecosystem. Of course, this is a whole lot of oil that we're dealing with. It's going to take a whole lot of hair.
Oh, yes.
That's for sure.
Oh, yes.
Maybe we should get the whole of Bon Jovi down there.
But I tell you, if we all do our share, because I'm going to do mine, once we do this bike trip, I'm going to cut off mines that also be used to help. So I'm not asking anybody to do that, something that I won't do.
Wow.
And my locks is a part of my spiritual belief. But I believe that I cannot lose them for no greater cause than to help heal this planet. So again, you know, I pray that everyone just stay involved. Jenka, I'm going to have to go. You just blew me away with this about Cheney.
Wow, yeah, you know, I want to thank you so much for this.
And listen, anyone who can come down, please come down. If you can't do no more than make a donation, please make a donation. If you can't make a donation please call your congressional representative. Please call your senator. Please get involved. You know, support others. Hold workshops. Sit down and educate others. And stay in touch with a media that is speaking or allowing the truth to be told. You know, support this radio station that is allowing this great opportunity to happen. And together, let's show that, yeah, we are a rich nation,
and we are a powerful nation. But let's show that we are a great nation, and we can only become a great nation when we reach out and help others in time of need. So let's make America a great nation once again. With that, Jacob, as always, babe, I love you, and I pray that the Most High continue to bless you.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Again, Malik Rahim with the Meg Perry Center for Environmental Peace and Justice in New Orleans. You can find more information about the HairMat project and on connecting with that volunteer effort on our website, kboo.fm. And again, at any time, you can give donations on our website to support this community radio station. We are supported by listeners. That's the vast majority of our funding. And it's 2 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Any last words, Rupert Popkin and Sue Castor here in the studio with me?
Yes, I have a thought. When Malik was talking, I thought, he said, anyone come down there and we'll show you how to do it. And the adage of see one, do one, teach one. We could all do that and get this oil spill, this oil gusher, or this oil lava lamp, as it was called on KBOO, and get on with our lives.
And I would just say it's a pity we can't take Dick Cheney down there to plug the hole. Just personally use him to plug that hole down there.
So many connections that Bush administration officials have and continue to have, strangely enough.
Yep.
As we continue into the Obama administration, which doesn't have its own hands clean in all of this. Obama himself took campaign contributions from British Petroleum, which he still has not returned, despite calls for him to do that. We're going to have to wrap up this segment. Again, this is our oil spill special. All day today, we're talking about the oil spill, and we are collecting hair to send down to the Gulf. If you want to get a haircut, come down anytime between now and 6 p.m. We have barbers in the studio volunteering their time. Please do wash your hair before coming. Wash out any products, and we want clean hair that we'll send down to help soak up the oil. At 3 p.m., Paul Cienfuegos will be speaking at the 2010 Village Building Convergence, or we'll have the recording of him speaking at the Village Building Convergence last week, about taking back power from the corporations, regaining control over our own lives and society. We will also have Democracy Now! At 4 p.m., local and national news reports related to the BP oil spill at 5. At 6 p.m., host Bill Zimmerman will explore the question of what the transformation of our economy away from fossil fuels will mean for workers. And then at 6:30, Guy Dauncey from the Earth Future Institute speaks with host Crystal Leedy about how we can come together to move forward away from our dependence on fossil fuels. Coming up next, the second half of Michael Rupert's description of his film Collapse, which is on transforming our economy away from this dependency on oil.
TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Michael Rupert, Collapse. This is the second half of a one-hour program based on the movie Collapse. Shot in only 2 days in May 2009 in an abandoned warehouse in Los Angeles as a marathon interview with Michael Rupert, the film has become an internet sensation. It was pirated almost 2 million times before its official release as DVD in June 2010. Michael Rupert is the author of Crossing the Rubicon, The Decline of the American Empire at the End of the Age of Oil, and also of Confronting Collapse, published by Chelsea Green. The movie Collapse is based on that book. In the book and movie, Rupert compiles his research on three interrelated problems: the end of oil, the collapse of the food system that is entirely dependent on oil, and of the financial system that has forced a regime of permanent growth on a planet with limited resources. In part one, Wupert dealt with peak oil and the expansion of offshore oil drilling as easy to find oil is running out. The New York Times wrote, "Lucidly and with wary conviction, Wupert cites evidence for a declining global oil supply and demolishes hopes pinned on substitutes like ethanol. He's shockingly persuasive, and the majority of his premises are verifiable." The part of the soundtrack of the movie Collapse that you are about to hear deals with food and money. Here is Michael Wupert.
The soil is the place from which all plant matter gets its nutrients. And if you keep sucking the nutrients out, the soil is useless. First of all, the topsoil on which food is grown now is nothing more than a sponge onto which we pour chemicals that we get from oil and natural gas. And without those chemicals, the soil has been turned into a junkie. The soil is worthless. So when you plant a crop now, what happens is you drive an oil-powered machine, drives along, and it plows. Then you drive another oil-powered machine, and it drives along, and it plants. And then you irrigate. Well, how do you irrigate? Well, that water is pumped by pumps that are powered by electricity. Where does that electricity come from? In the United States, it's either coal or natural gas. So next thing you do is come along and you fertilize it. All commercial fertilizers are made from ammonia, and the feedstock for ammonia is natural gas. So you have ammonium nitrate fertilizers that are then sprayed on by another oil-powered vehicle. Then the crop dusters come along that are powered by oil that spray pesticides that are all made from petroleum. Then when it's time to harvest the food, what do? You drive another oil-powered machine and you harvest it. You use another oil-powered machine to drive it to a place where it's processed. Then you wrap it up in plastic, which is oil, and you put it in another oil-powered machine, and you drive it X number of miles to a food distribution warehouse, an oil-powered machine to your supermarket. The way food is grown, produced, and moved around the world today, it's an enormous waste of hydrocarbon energy, which doesn't make sense. Why do we have strawberries for